It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and if you're on the road, drive carefully and just relax and sit back for an interesting program about historic preservation and historic sites in Anchorage. You know, I was thinking, just 1 year ago, my guest in the studio was Frank Reed Jr., who was talking about his experiences in World War II in Anchorage. He had been living in Anchorage his entire life, and he was, in fact, older than the city of Anchorage. And Frank sadly passed away not long after we did that interview. But it makes you realize just what a young city this is. You don't even have to be 100 years old to remember it from when it was completely transformed from a much smaller town. And it's still in a very rapid period of change. So how do you find history here? What is historic in a place that is virtually brand new? We're not living in London or Paris or even New York. We're living on the frontier. And so what's history mean here? And that's our topic today. We're going to be focusing on one particular historic site, but then we also want to bring in the whole span of the question, how do we decide what's historic? And I'm hoping that you will call in and let me know what do you think is worth saving in Anchorage, if anything, right? Or would we rather just wipe the slate clean, you know, and keep building? Or is there something here that's worthy of passing on to future generations to tell our story? So that's our topic today. And I've got two guests. Joe Antonsen is a historian with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Office of History and Archaeology. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
Thank you.
And Greg DeRocher is with the Friends of Nike Site Summit, which is a group that is working to preserve a missile site above on the mountains above Anchorage. And in fact, Greg worked there as a younger man, and I'm telling you, he doesn't look that old. Thanks for being with us, Greg.
Well, thank you. You're too kind.
Well, so the Nike site is when we look up from Anchorage and we see that lighted star in the mountains during the holidays, that's sort of near where the Nike site is, right? It's sort of up there in the mountains above Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, what we used to call Fort Richardson, and kind of near the Arctic Valley ski area.
That's exactly correct. The star actually was built, the initial star was built by some of the Nike site people in 1960. Started out as a little star. They thought it'd be interesting to have something on the mountain overlooking Anchorage, and then it got expanded upon over the years. And then after the site closed, it got really big.
Right. So this was a site that was built, you said, in 1959, and it became operational in 1959. And that was a period when there was real worry that Soviet bombers bearing nuclear weapons could attack the United States. And I know on the other side of the Bering Strait, Soviet military was also getting ready for us to attack them. So what was the purpose of the site originally, and what kind of weapons were kept there?
Well, the Nike Hercules missile system, it was part of what has been called the Curtain of Steel around numerous military facilities, large cities around the country. There's approximately, I think, 150 of these sites, and there's more in Turkey, various allies, Turkey, Germany, South Korea, had a lot of these batteries. In a typical town, or it had to be some kind of critical infrastructure, but a city like Anchorage, Fairbanks had a number of them. They would be surrounded by these batteries. Here we had Nike Site Summit is Battery B. Battery A, anybody that's gone cross-country skiing or picnicking at Kincaid Park and gone into the chalet, in quotation marks, that is actually a missile bunker. A former missile bunker that was converted, which is kind of a nice segue from the Cold War.
And if you go in the back room, you can see these huge steel doors and stuff
that's
still there.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we had three batteries. A battery, which is now Kincaid Park, was a double battery, and we had a B battery up on the mountain that I was stationed at, and then Charlie battery was out at Goose Bay, and those are the three that were around Anchorage.
And the missiles, these Nike missiles, were intended to bring down Soviet bombers they were attacking, but they weren't just They weren't just sort of what we think of as anti-aircraft missiles. There were actually some of them were nuclear tipped. Is that right?
Yeah, they were proximal weapons. In the 1950s, of course, they didn't have ICBM technology, so they were expected to fly over Alaska on their way to the United Lower 48, and we were there to intercept them. And if you have a proximal burst, you take down a Soviet squadron.
Mm-hmm. Now you were actually stationed up there and worked there when you were was it the Air Force?
It was the Army.
In the Army, okay.
Yeah, the missile batteries. It's kind of people think it should have been Air Force, but it was part of the artillery, and so it's part of the Army. And I was stationed there from 1974, May of 74 through December of 76. I was a MP up there. We had high security, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. So you were just sort of guarding it against security risks to the weapons and the nuclear weapons and everything.
That's correct. When we went on patrol, we had M16s, 45s, and a battle ready contingent of ammunition when we were wandering around
up on the mountain in the cold and the wind.
I got stories.
Who's going to come up there? Yeah. So I mean, let me just ask this question: did you ever? When you're on your patrol, think in the 1970s, wow, this will be a historic site someday. It should be a museum. I mean, would anything like that ever cross your mind?
I never thought that. I did think many times when I was eagerly awaiting to get off of the mountain, I often thought that I would be glad I did it after I was done with it. Mm-hmm. And that proved to be true.
Yeah. So, Joe Antonsen, your job in part is evaluating historic sites and determining, I guess, what's historic. I guess everything in the past is historic in some sense, but we can't save it all, right? What is it about this particular site, this Nike site, that makes it important compared to some other old piece of military junk?
It's such a great collection of buildings that certainly still have enough sort of their characteristics so that you can identify them and associate them with the Cold War. And, well, typically we like for properties to be 50 years old or older. In this case, because of its association with a nationally important program for the defense, it was possible to document it and to see what we had. And important to do so early before they cleaned up the site, as they have done with a lot of unused military defense sites from World War II and more recently from the Cold War. And as we studied it more and more, in fact, they had cleaned up many of those Nike sites that Greg mentioned. And I'm delighted that we have that great collection of buildings up there on the mountaintop, close to Anchorage, with great potential to be both an educational resource as well as continue to be used and of great interest to people who visit the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that brings up an issue of why you would want to save something, right? I mean, there could be, I'm sure there are many, many, many Cold War sites all over Alaska, because we were one of the main places where money was invested, and it was a huge part of the development of Alaska economically. But a lot of those are way out where nobody will ever go. So they might even be more important than this particular one, but this one is near where people could learn about it. So is sort of that potential of people being able to use it educationally, is that an important part of the consideration?
Oh, I definitely think so. The idea of teaching with actual physical fabric, the building sites, structures, objects from our past, is for some people a really great way to learn, and it captures their interest and gives them pride not only in history but in their community.
Mm-hmm. So I started out the show talking about how Anchorage is such a young city, and in fact most of the construction that happened in Anchorage in its early years was low quality, quick. It was a kind of a camp before it was really a city. And so we don't have many great monuments to preserve. How do you go about looking at what's historic or what's important to preserve when you're looking at a place like this that's so new?
Well, a big part of it is talking to folks who've lived here for some years and getting them talking about what they did, events that happened, people of importance, and then sort of asking questions about, are there properties that reflect those events and people, and where are they, and do people care about them? Should people care about them? How could they be adaptively reused or continue to be used? What would recognition do to help them so that we do know about Anchorage's history?
Mm-hmm. And how do they, I mean, a property owner nominates their own property typically, or how does it come about that something comes to your notice?
Well, anyone can nominate a property. It doesn't mean that it will be listed in the National Register of Historic Places or the Alaska Landmark Register for the state of Alaska, because the owner does have an opportunity to comment and to object. But usually we're able to convince people that there is something important about a place. And so the owner can nominate it, and sometimes they do, because there is the possibility for properties used for commercial purposes of an investment tax credit, which is a nice incentive. For owners of non-commercial properties, there's a chance for grants and loans when there are funds available, which is not often from for historic preservation, to help them then fix them up. And then there's technical assistance available. So they can, or a group of folks such as our city. Our city has a historic preservation commission that can prepare a nomination. Actually, they can apply through our program for funds to work on pulling the documentation together. Nonprofit organizations often work. It gets more complicated when you take a number of properties and want to do them as a district.
Maybe get into that more later. I want to thank both my guests for being here. I think this is going to be an interesting conversation, and I hope that you listeners will get involved too. You know, there are some buildings in Anchorage that seem quite historic. The Fourth Avenue Theater, certainly one, and that's one that's been, you know, consistently at risk, and I'm not totally sure what the status of it is now. And then there's other just little cottages that don't really look like anything, that maybe are as historic, but they don't look special. And we're also talking about the Nike Site Summit, and what memories do you have of that? I wonder if there's any other veterans who were stationed there, or folks who remember the role of that facility in Anchorage history. So if you want to get on the air with me and my guests, the phone number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage is 888-353-5752. 888-357-5752. Email is a good way to get on the air at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we do have a website set up for today's show. Go to alaskapublic.org, and you can click on today's show, and we have some links to my guests' organizations and other information about our topic. So, Greg DeRocher, what is this Nike Site Summit group? Is this just a group of enthusiasts, and how did it come together? How do you guys sort of decide that this is what you wanted to do?
Our acronym is FONS, Friends of Nike Site Summit, and I have to credit our director, Jim Rinkert, with getting the whole thing going. It wouldn't go anywhere without him, and he got the ball rolling, 5 years ago now, I think, something like that, and it quickly got joined by different people. The National Park Service, Daryl Lewis with them, got on board, and the State SHPO office got on board, and so
there's the State Historic Preservation Office, or what's SHPO? I'm getting a nod from Joe, so I guess that's right.
Yeah. State Historic Preservation Office, correct? Okay. Yeah. So Judy Bittner got interested from that organization, and so we had entities involved, and we had to come up with a programmatic agreement with then Fort Richardson, now, as you said, J-Bear. And so there's been a lot of negotiation. The whole thing initially was sort of brought about with a sense of urgency, because from our perspective, the military wanted nothing more to do with the mountaintop.
They've just got an old liability.
Yes.
There.
Mm-hmm. While, you know, you consider the stuff that it was built with, as asbestos and lead paint, mm-hmm. and things like that, lots of hydrocarbon material possibly around, and they're just, it would have been easier for the military bulldoze it, smooth it out, and like nothing ever happened. But we, and there's a number of veterans, you mentioned veterans calling in, there's a number of veterans that have been involved and have already taken the tours and stuff. So mm-hmm. there are plenty of veterans up here from those days and from the various missile sites. So we got involved, got enthusiastic, and under Jim's direction, we've made a lot of progress. We're under the Alaska Association for Historic Preservation, AAHP, as the umbrella 501c3. So we kind of have the status of like a committee now under that organization. Mm-hmm. So people can make donations to Friends of Nike Site Summit.
So what are you raising the money for?
We got a lot of, a lot of buildings need to be.
You need billions of dollars?
Well, no. Actually, what we need, our big project coming up is the roof on the launch control facility. And, excuse me, it takes a lot to re-roof a large building.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're about halfway to the funds that we need. And we get a lot of volunteer, a group of us, of various sizes, depending on the weekend day during the summertime, mm-hmm. We'll go up there and do a lot of work.
You don't have enough work to do in your own house? That...
I hope my wife isn't listening.
Yeah. But when you go inside these buildings, what's there? Is all the technical equipment still in there and stuff like that? Or what do you see when you go there?
They're mostly empty buildings, but you can tell what they were for, especially with a little interpretation. One of the programmatic things that we've agreed to, and there's already signage that's being developed to assist with interpretation, but you can tell by looking at the launch bunkers, for instance, you can see the rails coming out of the building with a veteran guiding a group and telling them about what was going on there. You can almost imagine the almost like a flat car coming out with this 10,000-pound missile on it being raised up. And so the infrastructure's there. The signage will be there at some point. We've got people volunteering to do interpretations and stuff. Our volunteer work has gone to. We've really refurbished all the what we call sentry stations. In the Army, we used to just call them guard shacks, but mm-hmm. sentry station sounds better. And so, we're remediating, doing asbestos hazard abatement and lead abatement. We're working on the launch control facility in the lower part of the site. I should explain that the site, any Nike site, had a integrated fire control area, and about a mile to 2 miles away, there was the launch control area. They had to be separated because of the distance required for radar coordination with the launch. They couldn't be too close.
For electronic reasons, basically?
I think for tracking reasons. Mm-hmm. And so Nike Site Summit, the very top of the mountain, if you look at the star, just above the star, there's kind of a flat spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's the launch area is just beyond that flat spot. And then if you go up to the left on the mountain, if you're looking from Anchorage, if you go up to the left, sometimes in the summertime you can see some little, what looks like little white dots or something up there. That's where the Integrated Fire Control Center was. And that's also where our barracks were, where we lived. We could basically survive up there. We had all the store and everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But that's where the integrated fire control area was. So there's two separate areas.
Mm-hmm.
The top, the IFC, that building was beyond help.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been $1 million-plus remediation. And
so that's the one that was just torn down recently?
Yeah, and in fact, for a while there was like this bright light up on the mountain. That's where the construction area was.
Yeah.
They must
mm-hmm.
have had a generator with one of those million-watt light bulbs or something. But what they've done is... instead of just plowing up the ground, they preserved the footprint of the building mm-hmm. and the clamshell radar towers. So when the sun is just right in the evening, you'll still be able to see the little clamshells up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we've got a picture of that on the website, actually, so at alaskapublic.org, and they look kind of like mushrooms on stalks, these things, yeah. Okay, so is it all fenced off, or do you have to go on a scheduled tour?
That area, the upper part is fenced off, the lower part is fenced off, and the military really is serious about no trespassing on military property. So Arctic Valley, the ski area, the bottom of the Creek Valley, and partway up the side is state parkland. The ski hill, the ski area actually has a long-term lease from the state for the ski area on the parkland. But there's signs. The military put up lots of signs. It's very clear. Do not go past the signs.
Right, okay. So, when there's a scheduled tour in the summer, people can find out about that on your website.
And we had our first public tours this past summer. We had it was full, and it was great. People loved it. Yeah, we had two buses. Each bus had a veteran or actually a combination of people that were involved with the thing. So there was plenty of explanation of different things. The people loved it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a chance to get up and look down on Anchorage and see the Cold War history.
Yeah. All right. So the show is Hometown Alaska. We're talking about historic preservation in Anchorage, and interested in your memories, things that you'd like to see saved or perhaps even gotten rid of. The phone number here is 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Turning back to you, Joe Antonsen, a historian with the state of Alaska, what do we does our government, do we as a community put really any money into preserving sites like Nike, Site Summit, or other sites? Is there a budget somewhere that somebody's appropriating, or is it just sort of like when somebody contributes, we do it?
Well, under our state program, the municipality of Anchorage is a certified local government, and so it is eligible for grants from my office, because the program is a federal, state, local partnership, and 10% of the money we get from the federal government for to implement the historic preservation program in Alaska, we re-grant to these certified local governments. So that gives them a small pot of money.
So like how much, roughly?
We always have about $85,000 that we have to divide.
For the whole state?
For the whole state.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
13 communities are eligible, and of those 13, about 7 have active programs. And then they do have to
match
that money. It doesn't, but then you leverage it, mm-hmm. which is what we do. And it slowly but surely gets things done. And the most recent project, which we put some money into in Anchorage, was the development of four neighborhood plans to look to what's important to people in the neighborhood that they would be interested in saving, and looking at ways that we can encourage that to happen.
Oh, neat. Which neighborhoods are you looking at?
The four neighborhoods they did were Government Hill, Fairview, the South Addition, and Mountain View.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are those plans, is that ongoing that people could?
They're finalizing the plans, mm-hmm. and yes, it will be ongoing because planning is a big part of it. I was going to say that prepping to come here today, we have 22 listings of Anchorage properties, including like Site Summit, which is a district of, I believe, 26 buildings. So it's more than just 22 buildings that are recognized. And we're planning now. I looked at the listings, and most of them are for the earliest years into the 1930s. And so we're trying to identify what from the 1950s and 1960s up to the Project 80s buildings might be ones that we would like to preserve, because they recognize people and events and things significant in this community's history, and give you that sense of identity and place.
So can you can you mention a few buildings that you've identified through your planning effort in those neighborhoods? Or
well, I had fun. I asked other folks to help. Some of them included, and we've been talking with the folks with that old power plant down in the railroad yard. That could be a tax credit project, and in fact, something might happen there. We talked about the Kaloa buildings there on just around 15th and C Street. Mm-hmm. They're unique architecturally, and were also built right after the earthquake, as was the Captain Cook Hotel, mm-hmm. which not only could be associated with at the time it was built and showing faith, but with Walter Hickel.
Those are just short of 50 years, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right. The Alaska Federation of Natives building definitely is a representative of the Native Claims Settlement
Act. Which building is
that? Siri building, actually. But it housed AFN, if I remember correct, which mm-hmm. also was the start of development moving out of downtown to Midtown.
That would be, is that a glass building sort of on C Street near Fireweed? Is that what I'm thinking?
Northern Lights.
Okay.
Yeah, right there.
Then the funny thing is that building's not that old. And I'm reminded of visiting my grandparents when I was in college. And they had a famous guy having lunch with us who had been involved in filmmaking during the Depression and was sort of known for that. And he said, "What are you studying?" And I said, "Well, I'm taking a class on history since World War II." And he sort of looks at me and like, "What are you, crazy? Since nothing that happened in World War II is history, that's current events." And so now, Joe, when you're mentioning buildings that I kind of remember being built, I'm feeling the same way I think that he felt. It's sort of like, maybe it's a sign of my age, but I don't want those to be historic yet.
Well, another one, I'd like to mention two mm-hmm. more places that came to mind. One is the quad at the old, it's now the University of Alaska Anchorage, the old ACC quad. Mm-hmm. Those buildings around the quad all are of the same scale, style,
sort
and
of
give that sense.
70s community college architecture. I'm never not sure I want to say that either, but go on.
Right, and the other one that you'll love, Charles, is at some point in time, I think we should be very proud of and recognize as historic our Chester Creek bike path.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll go with that one, and that one's and Laney Fleischer, I'm sure, who did that and is still living down there on 10th Avenue, would support that one.
So we had fun coming up with the list.
It is interesting.
Thinking and talking about it and getting the stories from people who worked there or lived there or mm-hmm. built them. We got to do it while they've got their marbles.
you've given us lots to talk about. But right now I want to go to a caller. Bob is calling from Anchorage. Bob?
Hi. I want to thank you for the opportunity to have Greg and Joe on the program there to talk about historic preservation in general and the Nike Site Summit in particular. One of the interesting things about the Nike Site process is that we do have a number of folks like Greg who have served up there, and they have some very, very interesting stories to tell. You might ask Greg to expound a little bit on the multiple coats of paint in the Century Station and on some of his tales of going up and down that mountainside in the wintertime.
Well, I will. I actually remember going up and down it in the wintertime in a VW Bug to go skiing at Arctic Valley when I was a kid with my parents, but which could be quite hair-raising. But Greg, do you know the stories that he's talking about?
Yeah. Bob is an architect, a retired architect, and he's been a member of FONS, I think, right from the inception, and he's been a very valuable person in instructing us as to, you know, how to best preserve things. And one of the things you have to decide is when you're going to recreate, recreate a building the way it looked at a particular time, you got to figure out what time it was. And our buildings up there were continually being repainted. And people like me, I was a little bit of a Beetle Bailey. I was always kind of getting in trouble and getting extra duty, and I ended up doing a lot of painting myself. But that missile site was in operation for 20 years, and I think Bob discovered 27 layers of paint in the building. Now Bob would analyze the paint and match it perfectly to recreate the color of a particular time. I think we selected early to mid 1970s for our Century Station colors, but Bob was going over the paint and actually able to count the layers microscopically, and one of the layers on the paint that went around the moldings inside the buildings, he was able to extricate a perfect external mold of one of those corners. I mean, you could see all the molding structure and everything in paint, and it stands up by itself.
You can
put it right down, and it makes a right angle of like 27 layers
of
paint.
And every layer represents some kid getting in trouble.
a lot of them do. painting and mopping. You know, there was other things, but and that's on all the, I mean, there's not 27 layers on all the buildings, but every building has multiple layers of paint. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, thanks. That was a good call. Anything to add?
Not at the moment.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. And it's Hometown Alaska. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll come back and give you the phone numbers. We've got someone else waiting on hold. So it's a fun topic. I'd really like to hear from what people think of some of the buildings that Joe listed about whether they should be saved or not, and maybe any others you want to nominate. But we'll talk about that all and more when we come back to Hometown Alaska in just a minute.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about historic preservation, what buildings we want to save, and particularly the Nike Site Summit Cold War site up above Anchorage in the mountains, and which is young enough to be in the memories of people who aren't that old, but I guess old enough also to be considered historic. So that's our topic today, and I've got two guests with me, Greg DeRocher, who's with the Friends of Nike Site Summit and also a veteran who was stationed there, and Joe Anson, a historian with the state of Alaska. And your calls, if you're within Anchorage, the number is 550-8433. And from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And our email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I'd like to go to Caroline, one of our regular listeners. Caroline, did you have a comment?
Well, actually, Bob kind of stole my thunder in that I was going to call and make sure and mention him as the only person I know that's been involved in this and other projects around the state, and compliment his work and the work of everyone that goes into this, because one of the things I have to keep reminding myself is just because I didn't participate in the work that went on at that historic building doesn't mean it doesn't have great value for us, and we should try to remember what came before us, because that's what we've built our lives on. And I know one of the projects that Bob was involved in some years ago was one of the historic Russian churches, and I'm guessing that anything over 200 years is going to be from that occupation from Russia some of the native dwellings, and certainly we revere the totem poles and stuff like that. But yeah, it's important, and everyone likes the Fourth Avenue Theater. That would be my first on the list. But I was going to ask about whether or not they're going to have more tours, because my guess is this could be marketed to people coming up here, especially if it were pitched to our veterans that come up through the through the different bases. I guess we only have one base now. But to put the word out about this, because we certainly must be the largest city of over however many, 175,000 or whatever it is now, to have a Nike site within driving distance.
Yeah, good question. And I think our population is getting close to 300,000. But let me turn that to Greg. Is it possible that you'll be bringing tourists up there? I guess that's logistically kind of complicated because it's so far out of town. But is that sort of in your radar screen to do?
It is on our radar screen. And we had to turn people away this when we had our tours this summer. It's been suggested that we advertise to the cruise ship industry, and that's all on the radar. We're going to be offering a number of tours this coming summer. One of which is being planned for the solstice. So maybe go up at I can't remember what time the tour committee came up with, but it'll be late evening, and so people can see it in the midnight sun, so to speak. Right now, I don't think, like, for the next year we have to worry. I think we're going to have as many people as we can fit, and we have to coordinate with the military for tours. So we can't just have tours every Saturday afternoon, 3 to 6 or something like that. It has to be worked out. The military can't be firing at the range along the highway. The range has to be closed down. The road goes through part of the fire fan, it's called. And people have to get the explosive ordnance disposal, the UXO, or unexploded ordnance, UXO. They have to get a little training session to know what to look for.
So in other words, if one of your guests finds unexploded ordnance, that they don't touch it or something
like
that?
Yeah, not only don't touch it, but also...
Tell somebody, yeah.
Walk backwards the same way you came in. And
how likely is that?
That's really unlikely. Okay. The military does use that area because it strongly, I guess, this is what they tell me, it strongly represents some of the terrain in Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
And so they use it for that kind of training. I suppose there's always a likelihood that someone could maybe drop a grenade simulator or something, which, while not deadly, if it was mishandled, yeah. it could definitely hurt. I don't think there's going to be any live.
Right. It always
that.
Strikes me as funny that all this is going on in Anchorage, and the civilian population knows so little about it. Well, thanks, Caroline. That was a good question. We're going to move on to another caller, if you don't mind. But thanks for being with us. All right, so now I'm going to go to Shauna, who is calling from Anchorage with a comment about Government Hill. Shauna?
Yeah, hi. I live up in the beautiful Government Hill neighborhood, and I live very close to what I believe to be the first school in Anchorage, and I'm just wondering if there's any talk about that or what's going on with that or anything up on Government Hill. There's all sorts of Quonset huts and old houses, so I'm just interested in that, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, I used to be a Government Hill denizen and, in fact, a community council president, and there's the school there that collapsed during the 64 quake and was moved and rebuilt, and Sunset Park is the site of the old school. And there's also the old communications building, which was the site of the wireless communications between Anchorage and the outside world. That building still exists, I think, and it was used by USGS, I believe, to store core samples and stuff, and I don't know if anything's been done about that. But I think the first school in Anchorage is the Pioneer Schoolhouse that's down on 3rd Avenue. And Joe, can you address that?
The Pioneer Schoolhouse is the oldest schoolhouse. It is moved. It was downtown and is moved to its current site. We've just been working on that. It has a new roof and new windows, and all the moldings around the windows were rehabilitated in the past year or two. And the Anchorage Women's Club manages the building and provides tours in the spring for school groups, using it to tell students in one of the first elementary grades, their scope and sequence calls for them to learn about their community. So we have that building and the Oscar Anderson House and Leopold David and then they can kind of find where Tent City was and mm-hmm. the origins of the city that we'll be recognizing here shortly with Anchorage's centennial.
Yeah, coming up in 14. So this brings up an issue that is kind of seems to be a pretty big one in Anchorage, is that all those cute little buildings downtown that were historic, actually most of them aren't on their original sites. So the Oscar Anderson House is in Elderberry Park. I guess that was somewhere else. And Pioneer Schoolhouse was where it was more centrally located and moved out. That in some way takes away some of the historic character of a building, doesn't it, when they move it?
It does, and it does have to be addressed when considering whether it's eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. You try to keep a building, if in a residential setting, still in a residential setting, if on a corner lot, on a corner lot. Club 25, which actually we have recognized as the Wendler Building, is an example of keeping it on 4th Avenue. Was important when it was relocated.
Mm-hmm. And that used to be down by the Captain Cook Hotel.
Yes.
So then there were a bunch of other buildings downtown when the big, I don't know how long you've been in this business, but when the big construction boom took place in the 70s in Anchorage, there were a whole bunch of buildings downtown that were going to be demolished. And as I recall, Mayor Knowles had a plan to move them down to East Street and create a little historic district. Funding didn't come through, and then they were stored out at the dump. And I think the majority of them ended up getting burned or abandoned. And it kind of raises the question of how, you know, buildings that are kind of obsolete, how do you keep them alive? I mean, that's sort of a problem for us, isn't it?
It definitely is a problem. Because growth was so rapid in the 1970s. Many of those buildings were removed when they built the federal building, the new federal building. And that's where the recent passage of the National Historic Preservation legislation called for trying to find ways to reuse historic properties in different ways. Because really, we don't want buildings empty. We want them rehabbed and on the tax rolls. And so we now work to try to come up with adaptive reuses that still preserve the historic character and the significant features of a building so that it can be both used and recognized to help us understand our mm-hmm. sense of place.
Now, as I recall, there was a fund of money that was going to go into that project on East Street, and that since the project didn't go ahead, it was turned into an endowment for a nonprofit called Anchorage Historic Properties, which was around for quite a while, but I haven't heard of it in some time, and I don't know if that organization is still operating or how that was a sort of a city-chartered historic property group, maybe ran into some hard times or something. What's the status right now? I know you're not with the city, but do you know what the status is in terms of the city's historic property program?
I just recently heard that Anchorage Historic Properties, Inc. is still a viable entity. I don't know if they get the revenue from leasing a cottage there on by the National Archives building, the mm-hmm. old federal building.
Sure, that used to be their office.
Yeah. And the Browns Point cottage is up on Government Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I heard that they are the ones that are interested in trying to document and get turned over to from the federal government to the city or to a private group, the wireless station there up on Government Hill that you alluded to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's one little project at a time. we're coming into the last part of the show here, but if callers have questions about particular properties and opinions about some of the properties that we're talking about, the number here is 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook, and looks like people are liking us. So lots of different ways to get in touch with the show today. Joe, earlier you were listing some of these buildings that had come up to be sort of nominated or recognized as potentially being worthy of of historic preservation. And it struck me that a number of them were buildings that I would describe as being like not that impressive, you know, that something you would look at, for example, those old community college buildings and the university, which are sort of gray, you know, concrete slabs. And it got me to thinking that, you know, we used to think about history as being just about great men and great events and sort of the grand. And now we think of it more in terms of social history. What were people really like? Is that sort of the direction that historic preservation is going, and looking at buildings that kind of represented what was ordinary rather than only what was sort of extra special?
Historic preservation has evolved from, I like to say, the plantations in the South, from just saving the plantation manor house to trying to save all of the other outbuildings, slave quarters, and what have you. And there has been a definite change in the program to make it our history, not just the rich's history or the victor's history.
Mm-hmm. So that means you're looking at something that's very typical rather than something that's necessarily exceptional.
In a community, yes. I think it's what you're used to seeing every day that sort of defines you. In Anchorage, one of the first places that there was a concerted effort to save was the Potter Section House. As you headed out of Anchorage, it was just a local landmark, and when you left town, and when you came back, it was you were getting back into the town. And the modest section house that it was is still there now. It's still a landmark, I think, to the
and
people
I guess that's
of Anchorage.
An office for the Chugach State Park, which points to another of your points that you need to find some use for it. You can't just sort of save it and have it be a
Exactly.
Now I'd like to go to another caller. Tom is calling from Anchorage. Tom?
I'm in Spinard. I have an old home built in the 50s, and I'm having trouble getting it worked on. The Historical Society's, causing trouble or slowing things down. Who do I talk to about this?
All right. Well, I don't know about your particular building, but Joe, can you address how historic designation would affect a homeowner or a business owner?
I need more information about the building, quite frankly.
It's a single-family home. It was built in the 50s, and when I tried to get some work done on it, now it's going to be held up by the Historical Society. Any remodeling and repairs? And
there must be some public funds involved in assisting with weatherization or something for your property.
HUD's going to help me with a roof repair because it's leaking and sagging, and I don't know what to do. I've talked to the HUD people, but it's just taking forever.
Okay. Yeah, the Federal Historic Preservation Law means that HUD has to jump through, has to check to make sure that they're not destroying a historic property. That's the Federal Historic Preservation Act that set up what we call the review and compliance, or Section 106 process. And it does involve getting some information together and sending it to different agencies for clearances before federal funds can be spent. And the process does take some time because each of the reviewing agencies really needs a month with the workload that they have to do their work. And so I'm sorry that's holding up work, but the national preservation laws were passed because people in communities saw so much of what was destroying their neighborhoods that it's a grassroots movement that brought in the preservation laws that have that review and compliance component. And it was because of the interstate highways and urban renewal that people said, you're taking away the heart and soul of our community and what we think defines us.
Okay, Tom, so it sounds like that could maybe be worked out in a relatively short period of time, but thanks for the question. Let me turn back to you, Joe, and do people, if your property is designated as being historic, is that creating a lot more, I mean, in general, aside from use of federal funds, is that creating a lot more limits on how you can use your property?
That's a popular misconception, but it does not. An owner does not have to open it to the public to tour. They're welcome to, of course. And it doesn't mean they can't change anything. Again, to have a building used, oftentimes, like you mentioned, small cottages, people want to put additions on. Well, there's ways to put additions on where you still maintain the historic character on the principal or front elevations, and can do so in a manner consistent with the building. And actually, working with our office, you can get technical assistance to help and guidance to do that.
Okay. So we're talking about historic preservation today on Hometown Alaska. We've got a few minutes left. My name is Charles Wolforth, and you've been hearing Joe Antonsen, who's a historian with the state of Alaska. And my other guest is Greg DeRocher with Friends of Nike Site Summit. That's the missile launching site up above Anchorage on the mountains that a group of citizens is trying to get to be preserved and kept for tours and just sort of kept for the future. Greg, what's the what's the next step for you guys? Are you still fundraising? And what sort of sources of funds are out there available for what you're doing?
Okay, well, we've been have member donations, and we've had a lot of donations from people. And I should just mention our website for anybody that wants to check more what we're about. It's www.nikesitesummit.net.
Yeah, and we actually have that linked on our website. So if you go to alaskapublic.org, you can find the show, and we've got that link and some others for you.
Okay. Yep. And donations are tax-deductible. Our umbrella organization is the Alaska Association for Historic Preservation. And we've gotten grants. We've gotten a couple grants. We got $25,000 from the Alaska Historical Commission and $50,000 from the state appropriation and legislature. So that goes a long way. We need, of course, there's lots of stuff to fix up. So we need as much donations as we can possibly get. We'd like to restore the dog kennels. That's going to be a big project.
Hmm. Why did they have dog kennels?
We had guard dogs. Oh. We had the outer area was the limited area. The inner area was an exclusion. These are defined by fences. The mm-hmm. the inner area was the exclusion area, which was patrolled by specially trained people and their specially trained dogs. Not like normal police dogs. Their specialty was kind of like attack and cease.
Wow.
But I'm being a little facetious there. But I put on the straw man suit to get in the cage and sort of see what the dogs would do. And those dogs are vicious.
What's this? Scary.
They did not want to mess with those guys.
Uh-huh.
So we're trying to preserve that. Like as I said before.
But I mean, before you get onto that, I'm just curious. Did anybody ever sort of wander in there? I kind of remember as a kid thinking, "Oh, you know, no one should ever go up there." But all the security. Obviously, you never had to fire a missile at an airplane. But did anybody ever come in that, like, you guys arrested and grabbed, or is it just? A lot of vigilance means nobody. There's never any threat.
No one ever penetrated the outer fence. Our informal policy was the outer fence was halt, halt, bang, but the inner fence was bang, halt, halt. Save paperwork that way. But we did stop people. That would be outside the fence because uh-huh. there were signs on the hillside: no trespassing. No photography, trespassers will be prosecuted, et cetera. And we would stop. Now, we didn't haul people down to jail, but we would detain people that were outside of the fence, confiscate, not necessarily their camera, but we'd have them rewind their film, give us the film roll. We'd take it down, and that would be developed. And then any pictures of the installation would be confiscated, and then the rest of the pictures would be returned to them.
Wow.
We had a security position on the road that cars had to pass through, and people were turned around at that point. That mm-hmm. You always said, "Oh, I didn't know where I was," or something like that. Yeah, right.
Yeah. There's not many trees around there to confuse you. Yeah. So, I mean, did you feel like you were at war when you were there? Because, I mean, these sounds like war kind of activities, and yet we're talking about the 1970s. I mean, was it a...
Well, we're talking the Cold War, though. The Cold War was a real war, and as I like to point out to people, there was... Submarines were sinking each other in the open ocean, and and spies were killing each other in places around the world, and there was... planes were being shot down here and there, you know, that civilian jet that was shot down...
Korean Airlines.
Yeah. I mean, it was a war. And we kind of joked about it, and you always do in that kind of situation. But we always thought that, before we glowed, we hoped we'd get a couple off. You know, it was kind of the. But I mean, in most parts of the world, it was a war without gunfire. But it still was, you didn't know from one day, especially they have these various Middle East problems, mm-hmm. and you never knew from one day to the next when the balloon was going to go up, as we used to say, and then every once in a while there'd be some kind of foreign problem, and people's vacations were canceled, everyone was called to the site. I mean, you were there, you didn't know how long, so it was serious business. Yeah. You kind of joke about it, but you all, in the back of your mind, it's like, yeah, I hope we really do get a couple of shots off before we start glowing. And that's the thing we're trying to preserve. This if I could just read, I don't know what kind of time we got, but I just wanted to read our mission, our vision statement is to develop Nike Site Summit, the mountaintop fortress in the Chugach and home of the Arctic Valley Star, into an Anchorage Cold War historical attraction that educates the public about the frontier role Alaska played in our nation's defense, honors the sacrifices made by veterans of Alaska's Cold War era, and links them to Alaska's current and future strategic military importance. Mm-hmm. And kind of to shorten all that up is those who fail to learn by history are condemned to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's avoid getting into that kind of conflict with another country again. Right. Although, you know, it was a long period of peace as well, in terms of there was no world war during that period. You know, maybe it worked in that sense.
Mutually assured destruction was definitely, I think, kind of a, looking at the world now, having rogue terrorist nations that are unpredictable and may not have the same fear of dying as the Soviet Union, the United States, and China. You know, sometimes I think maybe those days weren't so bad.
Yeah. So I interrupted you when you were talking about the different projects that you're planning. You want to take care of the kennels, and what kinds of other things do you have on tap?
There's a missile assembly building, the launch control building, the bunkers the military is going to take care of, and they've already fixed the outer fence. We're going to try to repair the inner fence. So there's a number of things.
All right. Well, as you can hear by the music, we're out of time, and I have lots more questions, but I want to thank both of my guests, Greg DeRocher, you just heard, friends of Nike Site Summit, and Joe Antonsen, a historian with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Office of History and Archaeology. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy for our annual shout-out and thank you to Alaska's volunteers. That's a really fun show. You can call in and thank people who've done volunteer work on the air, and it's sort of a really positive, fun thing to be part of. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.